Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
What is going on? It's Karina Reichman coming at you live and uncut here from Manhattan with my boy, Isaac Sloan. Isaac Sloan, what the hell is going on? How are you? Great to see you.
Karina, I'm very well. I am just feeling the springtime. Fish is on tour. We're going to get to that in a couple of stories. Things are really and really good in part because we were both at a phenomenal Bruce Springsteen concert this past Friday at the Prudential Center in his hometown state of New Jersey.
Oh, my Lord, Isaac, what a great, incredible, that is just one of the greatest things. Before this Bruce tour started, like, obviously all I wanted was to go see Bruce, but absolutely had no conception that I would actually be there because prices, because my schedule is so completely unpredictable, I can't plan things like that anymore, I just can't. Or it feels like I can't, you know what I mean? And whatever. So it just miraculously, literally the day of, my boyfriend was like, do you want to go to Springsteen tonight? And I was like, Johnny, let me tell you, yes, I do, you know, and juggled everything. And it was just completely out of the blue and sudden. And like, what a better, like, what the fuck, you know? It's been a long time for me. I haven't seen Bruce in many years at this point, you know, and I love him endlessly. And, you know, it was in sort of stark contrast to, like, the night before. I was very blessed to see my friends Medeski and Martin open for the great Snarky Puppy, which is 13 heavily incredible schooled music cats, you know, coming together to create this sort of very intense, broad, elevated,
conceptual
jazz-esque music that was just very intense, you know, and it's very sort of, it's just wild. And it was really interesting and really cool. But let me tell you, to come off of that and see Bruce, where it's all about these incredible songs and how many records can you possibly make that are perfect and like, holy shit, and it's four chords and the truth and this guy is giving it up, like, song after song. Also, we were like in a suite above, so I could see everything below, and it was amazing to see Bruce with two wedges on the floor and not in your monitors, which normally somebody of that stature who runs around the stage as much as he does wouldn't opt for that, because he would want to be able to have the same sort of, you know, mix in his ears no matter where he was around the arena, you know, because he goes here, he goes there, he goes here, he goes there. But no, Bruce is old school as fuck, giving it up, sounding incredible, looking incredible, Jesus. And I was just wildly impressed. I was wildly impressed. You have seen now 3 shows on this tour.
I did, yes. I saw Philly in March after they were off. They canceled, or rather postponed, 3 shows in the middle of this tour.
Right.
With no real announcement about what was going on.
Sure.
But they bounced back in Philly last March, and that was a great show. I mean, I have been seeing Springsteen and the E Street Band since 2007. It was like one of the first concerts I saw, and then one of the first bands I repeatedly went to go see. And so it was just amazing to see them out on stage again. But it really did feel like as the tour went on, the band just got looser and looser and more songs started to come out. They switched out the opener of No Surrender at the Prudential Center for Lucky Town's local hero, a nod to being in Jersey.
Baby.
And Jersey Girl in the encore. Madison Square Garden, got Jungleland, we got Hard to Be a Saint in the City at the Barclays Center, and then over the 2 nights at the UBS Arena, they got Lucky Town, the title track off of that album, as well as Born in the USA and Mary's Place, which we got at the Prudential Center, back in the set list, and they're off to Europe in 2 weeks. So this was really an amazing send-off of this first leg where they pretty much stuck to a set list, but even in that, we're able to let loose, and I loved it a lot, and I got to see him on tours where there was really no structure and they were calling audibles and taking signs from the audience and learning covers on the spot. And he really brought a similar creative energy and presence to a more structured show.
Sure.
And you certainly got a great one on Friday. I was just reeling from that show all weekend.
So cool. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Incredible. And allegedly he got COVID right after that.
I heard that too.
Which is unfortunate, but they named, while that's unfortunate news, New Jersey also named a holiday after him.
On his birthday.
Right after that. So like, what, just a plethora of things happening for my man Bruce in his home state of New Jersey. I mean, nothing, like, there's literally nothing more emblematic of New Jersey than Bruce Springsteen. So it's a long time coming. I mean, shit.
Totally, yeah. I saw one run at the MetLife Stadium where the Giants play their games on the evening before Bruce's birthday. And the show was postponed a start time because of crazy storms. And we were huddled under probably like the stairs or escalators
at
MetLife Stadium waiting for hours for the show to start. And so it went well past midnight. And after midnight, he just started to work It's My Birthday into the lyrics of just about every song. Great that New Jersey is honoring it as well. I mean, local hero, it cannot say enough about it.
Really can't. Beyond thrilled that I got to like see a piece of it. It's like the coolest. I was so happy. Like that it just fell into our laps and I was like, yes, baby, yes, this is the best surprise. Yeah. Holy shit. Very so that cool. Was really iconic and incredible. And there's something we're sort of in the days between of a festival across the country, Isaac. It's called Coachella. It might be the biggest in the country.
It may be the most recognized.
Yeah.
It's kind of what people think of when they hear music festival.
Certainly. And it's changed quite a bit. If you look at the first year's lineups, you're seeing Beck, you're seeing Radiohead, you're seeing Tool, you're seeing incredibly, different sort of stuff than you're seeing now. But now, it's still pretty wildly eclectic in its own right, even though a lot of it is brand new, very trendy, very hipster-esque things that are like of the moment and happening du jour, if you will. A lot of things happen. We can't even begin to cover it all, but basically right now we're recording on the Tuesday in between the 2 weekends of Coachella. And last weekend unveiled a few things that we'd like to highlight. Number one, it was the first proper Blink-182 show with the original complete lineup since 2014, which is cool in a lot of ways. That band has undergone a lot of crazy stuff, and Mark Hoppus just got over his cancer diagnosis and you know, treatment and whatnot. And so this marked his return to the band. He was replaced by Matt Skiba from the Alkaline Trio for a few years of touring there. And then they sort of didn't do much at all.
It really shows how time has passed, because I saw the reunion in 2013, 2014.
Right.
And now it's considered another kind of reunion, which is really crazy.
Exactly.
It is, I guess, 10 years since I last saw them.
Isn't that crazy? I had that thought,
wild.
Too. I saw them on September 11th, 2013, do an underplay at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, which I put in my cap as one of the finer underplays that I've seen at music. I've seen now, you know, Blink at Music Hall of Williamsburg. For those who don't know, this is a 500 cap club in Brooklyn, New York. Blink, Skrillex, the Deftones. I was about to say Weezer, but I actually saw Weezer at Rough Trade, which is even smaller. But anyway, that was just such a great night of music, and they're so the perfect band to do something like that, because they are yet another sort of pretty emblematic band when it comes to, you know, they wrote several incredible, singable records that are so ingrained into the history and development sort of American punk rock, whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? And I think it's their definition, not for everybody, but those who loved them, revered them, and adored them. And for better or for worse, because now isn't he with Kourtney or Khloe Kardashian? I don't know any of the Kardashians, but Travis Barker has sort of become this sort of other very LA celebrity. He had that, you know, that reality show meeting up with the Barkers, God knows what, you know what I mean? So going from sort of this scrappy, you know, Californian punk rocker in 1999 to what he's developed into, it might leave a sour taste in some people's mouths, mine included, but you cannot knock the fact that Travis Barker reinvented that sort of extreme punk rock drumming, and his choices and his fills and his, you know, incredible snare rolls and all these things, like, completely shaped the sound of that trio and shaped the sound of modern punk rock.
Do you think that kind of trajectory that you're talking about for him has cemented their seat at Coachella? Do you think it's getting younger generations into the Blink music, or not so much?
I think it's probably really has. I think it probably has.
Yeah. To a certain extent, right?
And all of their, like, you know, Tom DeLonge, like, all of their sort of various, you know, degrees of quote-unquote celebrity, you know, have only continued to develop, I would say. Travis has a son named Landon Barker, who's now, you know, this total, like, TikTok hot shot, you know, quasi celebrity of his own, you know, making music and doing God knows what, you know. And he has a daughter named Alabama as well, who, you know, it's sort of part of this whole culture that, you know, I find mildly grotesque, but it's just part of the vibe. And I think it has sort of cemented them. And, you know, they had, like I said, the reality show. They've done everything to be sort of, you know, a quasi Kardashian-esque family at this point, which is hilarious considering now he's with what's her name. So yeah, I think it's brought the music into younger generations, for better or for worse. I love the music of Blink 182, though I would never tell anybody except for all the millions of listeners on this podcast and you that exactly. You know what I mean? It's not something I wear on my sleeve, but if you put on any of those records, do I know all the words? Abso-fucking-lutely, you know? But I think it hit me at the right time as a youth, you know what I mean? I'm a big fan, and I'm just, you know, I like three chords and fucking sarcastic lyrics and great vocal melodies.
A lot of humor in the music.
A lot of humor.
Yeah.
A lot of humor. And, like, you know, I mean,
riffs.
Incredible riffs. Incredible. Yeah. And, like, the, you know, the album art for Enema of the State, not to mention that you're naming your record Enema of the State. It's wrapped in this sort of punk all around. Totally. That sort of humor and that sort of element of early 2000s, late 90s sort of quote-unquote counterculture, post-Nirvana. Anyway, we could go deeper and deeper, but the band played for the first time all together since 2014. Big moment for them. We salute you, Blink-182. And regardless of what I think of, you know, what they've sort of turned into, at the end of the day, those songs are timeless. They really are. There's a lot of them that are just going to be around forever. And I think newer and newer generations are going to, you know, fall into that in such a kind of awesome way. So I think that's great. And fucking bless their hearts. Go Blink-182. And then the real bizarre thing that happened, I think, that everybody seems to be talking about, that I can't quite fully wrap my head around, but we should mention it. Frank Ocean. First show in 6 years. Went down last Sunday at Coachella just 2 days ago. And it has left everyone vehemently puzzled in lots of ways. Apparently, he was an hour late, first of all. They had apparently rehearsed, he wanted to build an ice skating rink around the stage and have ice skaters going around the stage in circles and whatnot. And this was apparently practiced and rehearsed to the nines. And then called off the day of the performance, which I think left a lot of confusion, backstage and in the production world for sure. That definitely seemed to come through when he did take the stage. It's been described as just bizarre and puzzling. There was apparently a DJ set that sprung up in the middle of the show to lead people to think that the, performance was over, but it wasn't. People like obscured Frank walking around the stage in a circle, but not in a cool way. It just left a lot of people completely puzzled.
Well, I know that when you do a show at Coachella, you often, many artists, especially the headliners, attempt to create a show that lives specifically for the 2 weekends of Coachella.
Sure.
Most iconically, perhaps, Baychella, the Beyonce performance from 2018.
Big one.
That's a big one. So I understand that there's probably a lot of competition, subtle competition.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of sort of artistic pressure and excitement and probably budget and team involved in these kinds of things.
It honestly boggles the brain to think of the absolute insurmountable pressure on a guy like Frank Ocean putting on his first performance in 6 years in front of probably one of the biggest crowds in the country. In fact, certifiably one of, if not the...
Well, and the whole thing is like YouTube televised, live streaming all weekend.
Completely.
And lives on Instagram forever.
And an infamy if things go wrong. It's a real thing. And, I wasn't there. I'm a Frank Ocean fan, not a super fan like some, I definitely drift towards Tyler, the Creator, if we're going to, go in the odd future realm of things. I'm a big Tyler fan. I'm a big Earl Sweatshirt fan. I'm a big Domo Genesis fan. Like, it's all a great world to me, and I definitely respect the shit out of Frank Ocean. It's pretty interesting to see so much sort of bewilderment at this performance, and all I can say, it's really true. We will take all of these things with a grain of salt, because holy shit. And also the amount of budget and cooks in the kitchen. Jesus Christ.
It's
people
wild.
Definitely he has a vision. Other people have a vision for him. Where do they meet in the middle? Where does money play into it? It plays into it because you have so much of it to spend and want to do something iconic with it.
Totally. No, yeah. Blackpink, the headliners on the Saturdays of Coachella, are the first Korean artists to headline the festival.
Incredible.
Which is amazing. Bad Bunny on the Friday. I mean, this really does, this festival lives on as a kind of important cultural thing that you will be looked back on, really. I mean,
it's true.
Which is funny because I tend to tune it out.
Oh, certainly. It's the type of thing that I would want to be 10,000 miles away from now, unless I were performing, in which case I would be throwing up every hour from all the ridiculous pressure I put on myself and my team definitely put on me to make an iconic performance. Next thing you know, I got figure skaters doing figure eights on my ass. Know what I'm saying? Cancel the performance. Show up 48 hours late. I'm playing on Tuesday. Nobody's there. Anyway, good talk. And you know what else is really interesting, Isaac? Let's give a fucking warm, resounding shout out to my brother, my boy in musical experimentation and development, a key pillar in Karina's life, the man who changed it all. His name is Marco Benevento. And guess who played his first Coachella? Marco Benevento as a part of L. Michael's Affair. And if you don't know L. Michael's Affair, you actually do, because you've been in every restaurant, coffee shop, hipster-esque establishment where they are playing his reimaginings of Wu-Tang Clan songs, which are, he has a very signature style. He's a producer. He plays keys. He plays horns. He's a wildly talented guy who has made an incredible name for himself in all of these realms, namely as a producer. And he put out these records that reimagine all these Wu-Tang Clan songs with this very defined aesthetic that's extremely retro, extremely tape saturated, extremely, you know, sort of sounds like it's of a past era. You know, it's retro fetishism in the most spectacular way. And he and Marco are good pals. They record all kinds of stuff together. Leon famously produced Marco's one record before this last one, which is called Let It Slide, with his signature imprint on it. And I'll tell you what else is exciting, Isaac. Of course, you know, Marco's up there shredding piano with my boy Leon and Nick Mufshon and Homer. And he has basically this wrecking crew of musicians that, like, play on all of his stuff. And now Marco's really been ensconced into this world, which is fantastic. Famously, Marco appeared with all these cats backing up Freddie Gibbs and Madlib on a Tiny Desk performance that people still to this day text me like, yo, is this Marco? And I'm like, oh yeah, it's Marco. And Freddie Gibbs sat in for the L. Michael's Affair performance at Coachella, which is very, very cool as well.
That is very cool. And that's a performance on YouTube that I recommend everybody check out. If you don't know NPR Tiny Desk, check out NPR Tiny Desk.
Yeah, it's great.
And what's the name of this performance?
The L. Michael's... Oh, that one?
Yes.
That one? That's Mad Libs and Freddie Gibb. NPR Tiny Desk will get you there.
Gotcha.
And it definitely has this entire wrecking crew of, you know, Leon Michaels, his L. Michael's Affair musicians and wrecking crew backing them up, basically. And a very notable shout out to L. Michael's Affair and Black Thought, the very legendary MC of The Roots, just dropped their joint record on Friday, which is a big deal. Marco Benevento plays on just about this entire thing as well. And it's one of the better hip hop records I've heard in a long time. It's really incredible. I was very happy and blessed to be in the studio with Black Thought and the L. Michael's Affair and Marco a few months back.
I remember this.
Listening to all of this, and I was like, holy shit. And it really blew me away. And now it's literally out for public consumption. Check it out. L. Michael's Affair meets Black Thought. And I don't know if this is announced, but maybe I'll leak it to the community. I don't know. They're definitely or, you know, I'll half leak it, but there's going to be some late night television performances here in which Marco will definitely be in the band, which is very, very cool. And I won't say what, I won't say when. And there's also there's some live performances going around that Marco will be a part of as well. And I'm just stoked for my boy, dude. It's a whole new, like, look at this pop culture Marco Benevento, the acid jazz Benevento Russo duo, purveyor of crazy circuit bent toys and absolutely incredible musicianship, is now playing Coachella on late night television and doing all this stuff with one of the greatest rappers of our generation. It's unbelievable. So I'm so proud of my boy, and I'm so stoked for him, and I cannot wait to see him just a few days after Coachella. We're going on a little weekend jaunt on the 27th, 28th, and 29th. So it'll be great to catch up and hear all the tales from, what's it called? Desert Valley, Indio, California, whatever they call it. Can't wait.
Nothing like fitting in a couple of shows between Coachella and Jazz Fest.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah.
That is a hardworking man.
Oh, man. He's doing it, and he's doing it proper. Very excited to catch up and hear about all the tales from the Golden Road. Nothing like playing a little Tennessee Jed right after playing some of the finest hip-hop the world has to offer at this moment. That's fresh.
That is pretty fresh. Speaking of... I don't know. This is kind of an interesting segue. We're very kind of focused on a kind of music culture that we don't usually talk about on this podcast.
Sure, which I think is nice. It's refreshing.
I think it's really great.
It's nice to, you know, dabble in all of these worlds, you know, which is something I find, you know, endlessly compelling and interesting. And like, you know, we definitely need to throw it back to it's our roots, but it's also part of our roots, right? We're talking about the band Phish here. You know them, you love them. We know them, we love them.
They're on tour.
They're on tour. West Coast, baby. And it's all happening. They played a 43... We're just cutting to the chase. We're going to cut it to the chase. They played a 43-minute long tweezer last night. That is a Monday night at
Never
the
miss
Greek.
A Monday show at the Greek Theater, Berkeley, not the Greek in LA.
Correct. Don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. This is a relatively small venue for them.
Very much
the
so.
Weekday shows.
Yeah.
Manage the demand.
And they were performing in 42-degree temperatures.
Yeah, that Bay Area chill.
Let me tell you, Bay Area, you know, it's one of my favorite places in this country. It doesn't, you know, if you go over to Marin, I feel like there's sort of more sunshine over there. But that, you know, when you're across the bridge in the Bay, Berkeley, Oakland, whatever it might be, it can get foggy. It's rainy all the time. It's pretty temperamental weather-wise, and it definitely is not experiencing the same incredible swells of heat that we're getting here on the West Coast. So,
and you said that this seemed to have some impact on the performance. Is that correct?
I don't know
anything about last night's show, really.
Yeah, they, you know, and for better or for worse, you know, it's all good, but there's a lot of chit-chat. Chatter is amongst us, right? That the first set especially really knocked Trey's guitar out of tune in a big way, that, you know, even to those amongst us who are not musicians and don't have perfect pitch or perfect ears, people were definitely hearing that and tweeting about it and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It was apparent. And I'll just say, you know, it's a real thing. And people were asking me, actually, like, you know, does weather affect the tuning stability of the instrument? And the answer is a fucking resounding hell yeah, brother. It sure does. Not only does... So let me run this down for the non-musicians among us. If you play a guitar or a bass, the neck of the guitar, the thing with the frets on it, where you press down on the strings, it is made of wood, typically, right? And the wood, in very extreme heat and humidity and very extreme cold and dryness, the wood basically contorts and either swells or, you know, kind of diminishes, and it can completely, you know, not only can the tuning get completely fucked up, but your experience of playing the instrument can change drastically. I will hearken back to some of my earlier gigs this year where I was playing outdoors in Lake Placid in 21-degree weather, and then the next week flying to Miami, Florida, and playing in 88-degree weather. And the things that happened to my bass in that time behind the scenes, it was worked on by, well, shout out to my boy Andy from Butcher Brown, who literally was in my room, bless his heart, fixing my bass before my performance. You know, taking the entire neck off and adjusting the truss rod and doing all kinds of surgery minutes before taking the stage, because literally I was losing notes, which meant if I was pressing down, the note wouldn't come out, you know.
No resonance.
So that, you know, who's to say what happened to poor Trey's guitar last night, you know, in the early moments of the first set, but weather, man. Weather's a real thing. So, you know, he got through that. And the 43-minute tweezer, Isaac, really wild stuff. And it almost felt like, to me, like the first 15 minutes of this jam were sort of not awe-inspiring at all. It was like a lot of like, and it almost felt like after that point, the band almost like subconsciously or consciously or whatever felt like, all right, guys, like no more pussyfooting around. There was nothing sort of to chew on. There was nothing to really latch onto. And then the rest of it was absolutely insane and fantastic. And it's just, you know, it's pretty cool. And I believe the last time Tweezer was played on a Monday was at the Garden in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a deep stat.
Which is a deep stat. So that's pretty interesting. And, you know, nothing like a Monday tweezer, man. And I'm just so stoked. It's great to see people, you know, that we know and don't know on Fish Tour right now. Like,
oh,
awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really, it's so nice to know that's happening. I'm hoping to webcast at least one of the shows this week.
Sure. Cool, man. It's fucking cool that it's all going down. And actually, we would be really remiss to not mention over the weekend, our friends in the band Gorilla Toss brought Stephen Malkmus of Pavement to his first Fish show and made every headline known to man. And, you know, we're talking Stereo Gum. We're talking everything. There's now an iconic picture of Gorilla Toss, Stephen Malkmus, and Trey during set break backstage. And it's pretty fucking epic. And we got to, you know, hats off to, and I had dinner with Gorilla Toss last night. They had a band rehearsal right after, and I had a band rehearsal right after. So we had a band on band dinner, meeting of the minds, which was fantastic. I literally love this band, Isaac. This band to me represents all of the cool things. They basically, you know, they put out records on DFA. They are now under contract with Sub Pop. They just put out an incredible record on Sub Pop last year, and they're, you know, working on their second one. And, you know, Stephen Malkmus literally slid into their DMs this time last year and said, hey, I want you guys to open a bunch of Pavement shows. If Stephen Malkmus slid into my DMs, I don't know if I would ever recover. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those fucked
up. And they did, right? They opened for a bunch
of Pavement shows.
They, it's amazing.
Like, six Pavement shows in huge places. Like, absolutely incredible. They're wonderful. They make this sort of, like, hyper pop punk dance crazy music with synth candy and hard-hitting guitars, and you know, Cassie Carlson is the singer, female fronted. I just think it's cooler than cool, and I'm just delighted to see that they, you know, they're bridging the worlds, man. Trey, for the record, is an enormous Pavement fan, and his favorite record being Wowie Zowie, and I think it's just it's a beautiful thing to see this sort of worlds collide. And I love that everybody is like sort of now, it's great press for Gorilla Toss, just this one backstage picture, because it's just like, you know, and Pavement posted it as Gorilla Toss expanded lineup, you know, which is just really cool. And I'm geeked for them on these, you know, that's such a cool, funny side quest thing to happen to your band backstage at a Fish show. And apparently they told me all about it last night. Malkmus really dug the Fish show. He was just like, holy shit, this is fucking crazy.
I love to hear that.
Right?
Yep. I'm sure Trey loves to hear that.
He does.
That is just, this is very cool. I think you're actually breaking the news to me about how this happened.
Oh, great.
Right now, because I did see the headline and like maybe scrolled past the picture, but that's really cool. I'm glad to have the lowdown on all of this, and I need to really do my homework on Gorilla Toss, because everything I've heard, I've really enjoyed, and I'm just glad to hear that they are doing the thing.
Me
and
too.
And more. I mean, like, what?
Yeah, right.
Like, this is the thing that they're doing. This is a very cool thing to be doing.
They were joking about it. It's just like, man, like, you know, because they were going to rehearse and we were going to rehearse last night after our joint band dinner. We were both just laughing and they were just like, man, yeah, no, it's going to be great to like feel like a band that like plays and writes music again, because we've just been doing these crazy side quests of like flying to the West Coast and taking Malkmus to his first Fish show and all this like random hilarious shit. So, bless their hearts. I love the band. I'm a big fan, man. I'm a big fan. So I'm glad we remember to talk about that, because that's good stuff. May Fish carry on this week into next weekend, playing their hearts out. They're heading to the Hollywood Bowl. Would be a really great place to see Fish. I know a lot of people going. Very, very pleased to know that so many pals will be in attendance and seeing the Fish at a place like that. It's fantastic.
Trevor Walsh, maybe?
No doubt. Shout out Trevor Walsh for being the most incredible. He's our pal. You know, loved this guy. He helped me curate 2 hours and 20 minutes of Dirty South Crunk Houston hip hop music from over under 2005. We're talking Paul Wall. We're talking Bun B. We're talking Mike Jones, who shouts out his own phone number in every song. 281-330-8005. That's like our generation's, you know, 8675309, baby. Unbelievable shit. So yeah, shout out Trevor Walsh. He'll definitely be at the Fish show. Love that guy. Thanks, Trevor.
And we also want to shout out RJB.
Namely RJB, man. That is a special dude.
I'd like to see him do a tiny desk.
I would would too. I would too. And I don't, you know, the last email we got from RJB, actually,
this is a side quest.
This is definition some weird ass side quest that happened to me. But it's reminding me of actually a thing that was very bizarre and really put a pep in my step last week. You know, they say in this industry, you don't get paid in money, you get paid in ego strokes. That's what my friend Tyler Bryant told me. And man, this one kind of fucked me up. So our friend Zena works for Partisan Records and as such is a voting member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she received her ballot in the mail, which has like a little write-up about every act being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she sent me a photo of the White Stripes one, and I am mentioned in the last paragraph alongside Danny Brown and Royal Blood.
Yes. Jack White tells Rolling Stone magazine that the whole point of the White Stripes is the liberation of limiting yourself. Which, by the way, in and of itself is something that I would send somebody because that's an interesting thing.
Certainly.
And certainly fits with our musical ethos.
In a big way.
One of the many things we think about is the liberating power of music. Of course. And then the article continues, a new generation is listening. From rock duos Royal Blood and Deep Valley to bassist Carina Reichman to rapper Danny Brown.
I mean, that almost took me out.
It's amazing. It really is.
Jesus, I talk about things not being on your bingo card for your Thursday. But then I literally, like, I was on the street and had to go uptown to meet my dear friend and publicist, Ken Weinstein, for dinner. And I walked from like 22nd Street all the way to 72nd Street, rolling calls and just being like, you know, there was a crazy little pep in my step there. So thank you, Zena. And thank you, Jack White, and whoever the incredible, journalist who wrote that. I still don't understand any of it, but man, it got me stoked. So that was fucking cool. And RJB, in his last email to us, mentions that and was just like, let's fucking go. So yes, RJ, let's fucking go. Let's. And I'm very stoked on that. We love you very much. We can't wait to have dinner. Maybe, you know, something where we limit ourselves in the spirit of the White Stripes. Like, you know, maybe like, you know, a hot dog, but with no hot dog, just the bun. You know, we think about that. Maybe some like... Sorry. I'm going off. But yes, RJ, we love you. Osiris, we love you. Very proud to be a part of this incredible team and organization. My man, I Boogie. Shout out to you, man.
Shout out to you, Carina.
Way to fucking pull it off. Great episode. Love this episode. Hey, listeners, you still listening? You like this one? I thought it was a great episode. Really covered a lot of ground, a lot of material. Exciting shit going on. Really exciting shit. We look forward to talking to you next week. There's so much going on. I'm barely staying afloat in the good way. I am staying afloat, but like trying to juggle it all. And this, like, it's such a grounding thing to be able to do this every week with you. Come hell or high water or skipping a week here and there. Not going to lie to you. It's all my fault. So thank you for bearing with us. I love to do this. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
I never learned at camp. Can't even pitch a tent. I've been jumping turnstiles, hailing taxis with intent. Do you need directions? I bet it's not where you're from.
Osiris. Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hello out there!
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!